is proud to present Beer Radio, that turns ordinary homebrew, into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainasheff and John Plisse.
Good morning, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Hallelujah.
Welcome to the show. How you doing, John?
All right. A little hungover.
A little hungover. You had a nice trip up to Oregon.
I did. Right?
Portland.
Yeah. McMinniman's is great.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, today we're talking about fruit beers.
Yay.
You have any good fruit beers up in Oregon?
No, I did not, because I don't like fruit beers.
You don't like fruit beers.
No.
See, now that's an interesting take.
Yeah.
I tell you, I've never met a well-made beer that I didn't like.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever made a good fruit beer, Jameel?
Well, of course.
I had to ask.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Of course I have. Yeah.
Are you going to share your secret with us?
I'm going to share all my secrets today.
Oh, boy.
About fruit beers, that is.
Okay.
Well, before we get started, I wanted to mention, you know, over the past few weeks and months, I've been doing a bunch of stuff with a national competition for the AHA. And
you look worn out.
I am worn out. But, you know, one of the things that I really have enjoyed about it is there are so many kind and giving homebrewers that'll spend a ton of their time. Hmm. They'll drive, hundreds of miles to come out and help. They'll spend, you know, weekend after weekend, helping sort entries or, you know, just steward or judge or, you know, whatever they can do to help, they'll do it. And, you know, it's really touching and it's wonderful.
Right.
And I noticed, that same thing, you know, when we started doing this show, I got some really nice emails back and forth with James at Basic Brewing Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And, he was very kind, very supportive, and very, very generous in his comments towards us and our show.
Awesome.
And trying to help us out. And same thing, of course, for Graham Sanders at Oz Craft Brewer Show.
Yeah, he's fun.
Yeah, he was great. Mm-hmm. You know, he's really, keep at it, lots of praise.
Yeah.
And, it's really great. And I think it's just a sign of, brewers in general, or as, Graham likes to talk about them as craft brewers.
Right.
Right. So I look at it as amateur craft brewers and professional craft brewers, but we're all craft brewers.
Sure.
And, there's and you see it from the professionals, too. They come in here and,
mm-hmm.
and other places. And it's just really, it's just kind of warmed my heart over, doing a lot of hard work these past few weeks. But it really makes me feel wonderful to be able to, see all these people pitching in and helping, and it's a really great community. And the same with the listeners, full of a lot of praise for the show, and
right.
and very generous in their praise as well. So,
well, we appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just wanted to say thank you to everyone out there mm-hmm. that's been so kind and supportive of what we're trying to do.
Right on. Well, that's what's great about the homebrewing community. It's very rare today to find a niche that the homebrew community offers to people, where people can share this passion that they have for brewing, and I think it really brings out the best qualities with other people, at least what I found with people, especially like with you, and I don't know if Justin qualifies, but with Jameel, so.
Yeah. Justin's a...
All great people.
Exception.
There,
so. Exception to many rules.
Yes. Fruit beer.
fruit beer, yes. So getting back to fruit beers, you say you'd never had a great fruit beer.
No.
Well...
Because I think they've been over fruity. Like, there's just too much fruit almost. It's just kind of, it's not beer anymore to me.
That's a good point. That can happen,
yeah.
Right? So, one of the most important things, if you're going to brew a really good fruit beer, you have to brew a really good base beer first.
Okay.
Right? If you want to make a raspberry porter.
That sounds good.
You've got to brew a really good porter to start with.
Right.
If you brew a shitty porter,
it's not going to be good.
It's going to be a shitty fruit beer.
You might add the raspberry to try to hide the shitty porter, right?
Well, that's the problem.
Okay.
A lot of times people say, "Oh, well, it's not a good porter. Let me pour some raspberry in it, and then, It was like, why? It's not going to, you know, add magic to it and make it better.
Right. Turns into cough syrup.
Yeah, exactly. You're just, you know, adding more flavors to an already bad product. So you can't do that. You need to have a good recipe, a good beer. You got to be able to brew the basic beer first. That's one of the reasons, you know, you may not have a lot of good fruit beers out there, that you haven't tasted a lot of good ones, is because you have to be able to brew the base beer really well first.
Okay.
And then, you know, the extra work comes in on making it a fruit beer, and so it's harder than, you know, the basic beer. So it's a tougher style to do right.
Right.
But done right, it can be just excellent. One of the most common problems people have when they're doing fruit beers is they do the wrong kind of pairing. I give you an example, a pineapple IPA.
Oh, gross.
Yeah, exactly.
But I can see why you'd want to do that, but...
You can.
I had pineapples for breakfast yesterday, so yeah.
Pineapple IPA.
What about orange?
Orange, yeah. You know, the reason a lot of those don't work is you're choosing a really hoppy style. You know, really hoppy styles and fruits don't seem to work very well.
Yeah.
So
tend to clash a little? Or?
Yeah, and... You know, one of the things to do when you're trying to decide on a fruit beer is, you know, look to the world of food, right? Think of the German Black Forest cake. You know, delicious. And why? It's chocolate. Mm. It's cherries. And the chocolate and cherries have a nice, flavor to them together.
Yeah.
You know, and you end up with, a beautiful dessert, right? Mm. So, you know, think chocolate, think stout. Right?
There you go. Yeah.
Stout and cherries. Right? So you can take a lot of cues from the food world in making fruit beers.
Great recommendation.
Right. So, you know, I can't think of things that are really bitter that do well, but with fruit. But there might be some examples out there, but pineapple and IPA is not one of them.
So good. I'm really surprised you tried that, actually. Were you drunk when you thought about that, or?
Yeah, I think the
night bottling session.
I think the beer had a real pineapple character to it to start with. The hop somehow became real pineapple-y, and it really smelled like pineapples. So I just pushed it a little further,
and left it.
And again, the problem was, it wasn't a good beer to start with.
Okay.
That, and I think again, hoppiness just doesn't mix with fruit beers very well.
Did you just hear yourself? It was not a good beer to start with.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Was that like your first batch or something? Or?
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Okay.
There,
you know? I had to ask.
Yeah, you know, it had that pineapple thing. It could be drunk, and I'm sure Justin would have loved it, you know, but other than that, you know, I just didn't think it was that great.
Okay.
So, I committed that sin of trying to, you know, fix up something that really, you know, wasn't that great to start with, you know, and I suppose there might be examples of people getting away with that, but I just don't think it's that common. I think, you know, most of the time you're going to do much more poorly.
Right.
And you can look at, other commercial examples of, fruit beers out there. You know, a common base style to turn into a fruit beer is a wheat beer. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, Pete's does like a strawberry wheat, or Marin does a blueberry. What's there? Blueberry wheat or blueberry something? There's a bunch of examples out there that you can do. Now, I don't consider things like a creek or a framboise as being necessarily really a fruit beer. It is, I guess, technically, but
it's hard to do well.
Yeah, that's even trickier.
Yeah.
You get the New Glarus that with the cherries and all that, and you know, those are pretty intense as well. But the important thing is to, you know, look to complementary flavors when you're designing a fruit beer. Look for, you know, examples in the fruit world or in the food world. Look for examples in, you know, the commercial beer world for things that have succeeded, and, you know, and also in the homebrew world there'll be some good ones. So no hoppy beers, and
do you recommend a simple base beer, just like hardly any flavor to it, like a wheat beer, just to start out with?
You can do that, and you can. The advantage of that is you can go much more subtle in the fruit flavoring to balance, and that's one of the tricks is the right intensity for the beer. And one of the things that I like to do, especially when I'm making, there's two types of fruit beers basically. One tends to be towards the crisper, drier side, where you go lighter on the fruit. One tends to be on the sweeter, heavier side, where you go more intense on the fruit. And if you're doing something like a robust porter and you're going to add raspberries to it, one of the things you want to do is make it a little sweeter, a little bigger. Because what you're doing is you're making a dessert, right? You're not making a standard hoppy beer. You're going to make it a little sweeter, a little more caramel, a little more crystal, a little more residual sugar, a little less hop.
Okay.
And it makes it more of a dessert experience. And it balances well with the tartness of the raspberries. Will counter some of that sugar, but it's important to have that background sugar to make it more of a dessert experience. Right?
You're never not heard of that. Wow.
So, it's not much. It's not huge. Don't make a big syrupy thick thing when you're done, unless
but you just want more malt body to the beer.
And a tiny bit more sweetness, because there's going to be some tartness from the raspberry and all that.
Oh, right.
And that balances well with the fruit.
Okay.
And you're targeting a dessert experience in that case.
Okay.
If you're doing something like a wheat beer, more crisp and dry, and a lighter touch with the fruit, then it's a kind of the other side of the pendulum.
Right.
So you might want to make it a little crisper, a little drier.
Okay.
And, it'll seem a little more tart and a little more fresh fruit.
Hmm.
So one of the tricks to do with some of the fruits is you can add a touch of acid to the finished beer to bring up the tartness. You can add tartaric acid, or you could add lactic acid or phosphoric or whatever.
Really?
just a touch to kind of brighten up the fruit flavors, because fruits, especially on the crisp fruits, they tend to have a little bit of acid to them,
right?
And you want to balance that with the beer.
Okay.
And if it seems a little flabby when you get done, you can add a little bit, and that'll kind of brighten up the fruit flavors and the beer overall seem more like eating fresh fruit.
Okay.
Most fruits have a pretty good acid to them.
This is raw fruit, not extract you're talking about.
Right. And you could do it with extract too. It might help a little bit. We'll get into that, the whole
later,
what's better, extract, raw fruit, and it depends on what kind of fruit you're doing. I guess that was next up on our list to talk with. Good timing, John.
Yeah, all right, buddy.
All right, differences between the extract and fruit. Like I'm saying, some fruit types are better as extract. Some are better as real fruit.
Hmm.
I did a sample to figure out, what was best. I did a robust porter with raspberries, and I got myself fresh raspberries. I got myself an equivalent amount of raspberry puree, the Oregon raspberry puree in the can.
Okay.
And I got myself some raspberry extract. I brewed 10 gallons of robust porter, and I separated it out into the three containers once it was fermented, and I dosed each batch with an equivalent amount of raspberry.
Right.
And then I finished them off, bottled them up, and I took them into more beer. And I had Olin and Chris and Regan and JP and I don't know if you were there then.
It
was quite a while ago. And I said, hey, here are three beers. One's extract, one's whole fruit, and one's the Oregon puree. I said, can you tell me which one is which? And there wasn't a person there who couldn't tell me which was which.
Really?
They all knew which was the extract. They all knew which was the Oregon puree. They all knew which was the real fruit.
And how did they know that? I mean, the flavors, what were they picking up?
Right. And I asked them. I said, okay, I know, how I tell the difference. Describe to me how you, the extract one is kind of extracty. It's a little more perfumey, and there's, kind of like, doesn't taste like fruit.
Right.
It tastes like
some more aroma than flavor.
Yeah, and a little more artificial.
Oh, right.
Right. On the whole fruit, it was much more tart and lacking in flavor.
Okay.
Fruit flavor. Right. In the aroma and all that. And you'd think, it's real fruit, it's gonna have more aroma. It's like, well, the extract tends to have more aroma.
Okay.
And then going on the puree, Oregon Puree, that was actually the best one of the three beers.
Right.
And the reason is they harvest, you know, tons and tons of fruit, and they can balance the blend to get you the same fruit intensity, the same flavor, get you, you know, the right sweetness. I mean, they, you know, they've got an art of making that puree consistent and high quality.
They
use very high quality.
Do they adjust those purees, like the acidity in them, before they can them?
Well, I'm sure they make some, but they can adjust also by blending different crops of fruit.
Oh,
and,
right.
You know, different, you know, some that's, you know, longer on the vine or less, and, you know, get a nice balance to it.
Right.
And that turned out really well, and that had all the fruit flavors. It wasn't quite as sour as the fruit I picked up at the store,
right.
And had a good aroma as well.
How much raw fruit did you actually use?
Yeah, I'd have to look back at my brewing log for that, but it was probably like a pound for, you know, I divided it into three-gallon batches or 3 1/3 gallons,
so
something
pound.
Like that.
Interesting.
Or it was pretty close to that.
And did you take the seeds out of the fruit at all?
No, they were raspberries, so there was a lot of little seeds.
Okay.
I didn't worry about that.
Okay.
But it was an interesting experiment in, you know, what the differences were between those, you know, the whole fruit, the puree, the extract. And in general, when choosing which to use, my process kind of goes like this. If the Oregon puree is available, that's what I use.
Let's get that.
You know, it's hard to go wrong with that. It's sanitary. You don't have to worry about bugs that
right.
you do with whole fruit.
Right.
It's got more of a round flavor than the extract, et cetera, et cetera.
Of these three additions that you did, when did you add them?
You know, it was after fermentation was pretty much complete.
So you even added your fruit extract to secondary or to kegging?
Yeah, it was all at the same time.
Okay.
I wanted to keep it all the same and adjust them the same and all that.
Okay.
So if you're doing something like, you know, certain fruits are very difficult to do off of, you know, the actual fruit.
Like you wouldn't want to do like a lemon beer because it would just be so acidic, right? I mean.
Right, there would be a lot of acid, and, you know, you'd either have to balance that out or, you know, if I was doing something like a lemon beer, maybe some lemon extract and some lemons,
okay.
You know, again, for some tartness
right.
to bring up the feeling of whole fruit. And you would adjust that, you know, at bottling or at kegging.
Right.
And that'd be the way to do something like that. I had an excellent lemon pilsner on a flight. Where was I flying? Somewhere up to Seattle or, you know, somewhere around there, or Oregon. And they served it on the flight on Alaska Airlines, and it was excellent. I was like, oh, you know, sounds, you know, I thought, oh, this is going to suck, but I'll try it anyways. Because otherwise I had, like, Bud Miller Coors and, you know, this lemon lager.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll give it a go. And it was delicious, and it was really well done and really well balanced.
Nice.
So it was like a, you know, just a basic pills with that. And so, you know, lemon will go. That's a good point.
But that's a good way to do it. If you're going to use fruit at all, use all three the first time. Find out what works and
right.
then go with that.
Well, and you can also do a blend of the different sources of fruit. So you could take some Oregon puree, and if you need a, you know, want a little more aroma to it or a little more intensity, you could dose it with a little bit of extract. Flavoring to you know, bring it up a little bit,
right.
or to kind of, you know, round it out, you know, or, you know, real fruit and extract, and the amount of extract or fruit is going to vary with the style of beer. So when you're doing something you know, crisp and drier and more simple like a pilsner or a wheat beer, there's not a lot to hide the flavors, so you're going to use less of your fruit component.
You don't want to overdo it too much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It becomes way too intense. Like you're saying, it's just
all
way overdone. Yeah, you want some of the beer character to come through in the final beer. If you don't have that beer character coming through, it's not going to taste very much like beer. It's going to taste like a bad fruit beer. It's going to be too intense. And it's just not good. It's like if you wanted to, you know, have a fruit drink, you'd, you know, have some Kool-Aid or
right.
some Gatorade or something. You wouldn't have...
I just pour a Pilsner into Kool-Aid.
Yeah, you wouldn't.
So why not do that?
Yeah, you wouldn't. You know, you want the beer character to come through. So if you're doing a really dark, intense beer, say you're doing a Russian Imperial Stout with cherries or something like that, you want you're going to use a lot more cherries.
Right.
Cherries are, it'll blend well with that. But if you don't use enough, the huge roastiness, all the alcohol, the esters from the fermentation, all that stuff is going, and the sweetness, it's all going to mute the cherries. So you're going to need to start with more for a darker beer like that.
Well, if you're doing 5 gallons, what, 10 pounds or something?
Well, it depends on the type of fruit. Now, something like raspberries are quite intense.
Okay.
And so you tend to use less of them. Cherries tend to be fairly, especially, fresh cherries tend to be a little less intense in flavor and tend to not stand through as much. Something like strawberries takes a huge load of real strawberries to get strawberry flavor in a beer. So you might want to mix that with some extract. Same interesting flavors like peach and apricot. They're both a sulfury type of fruit. And what's interesting is the majority of people have a hard time telling the difference between peach and apricot.
Yeah.
Interchange them in people.
Especially
tell them
the extracts, especially.
Yeah, I mean, you tell them it's one thing or the other, and, like, okay, and nobody will argue with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very subtle difference in some ways.
The peach extract I like a lot because it's subtle, but versus like the cherry, this is like cough syrup almost.
Right. Artificial cherry is really bad. Yeah, it tastes like cough syrup.
Like NyQuil almost. It's gross.
Yeah. Artificial cherry is one of the ones I wouldn't use extract with. I mean, you might try just a tiny dose of the extract along with lots of real fruit, but yeah, cherry is difficult, and you need a lot of cherries in a pound, a gallon a lot of times in order to do something like a Russian Imperial Stout.
It's a fruit fly.
It's a fruit fly coming to join us.
That's awesome.
You heard us talking about all this fruit?
Just hanging out.
came in to join us. Cool.
Good friend of mine, Dave, he adds 20 pounds of strawberries at Flame Out when he does his blonde ale.
Right. Strawberries, and you need a ton.
Oh, but it's
that's
well
what Pete's
balanced.
Does is a strawberry blonde.
It's
yeah.
Delicious. It's very good.
Right, and that's in how many gallons? 50 gallons?
No, 10 gallons.
10 gallons, yeah. Yeah, so
20 pounds.
Two pounds per gallon on strawberries, right. Yeah, it takes a lot.
Yeah.
And that's even in a fairly light beer.
Right.
If you tried like a strawberry porter or stout or something like that,
more.
You'd never taste the strawberries. You'd be putting a truckload of strawberries in there. artificial strawberry flavoring isn't too bad. It's kind of along the lines of like cough syrups. You know, if you can find a cough syrup that tastes pretty good,
Use cough syrup.
Well, and the interesting thing is certain extracts taste nothing like the fruit, but we've come to accept that flavor. Like artificial grape flavor doesn't taste like grapes at all.
Not at all.
It's something totally different, but we accept that as being
grape
and it's more like candy. You take things people have done a bunch of around the country. I've never done it, but they've done the Jolly Rancher beers where they use Jolly Rancher candies.
Yeah,
and they have those really intense like the watermelon and things like that
sounds good.
They're very artificial, but if you're prepped saying, hey, this is a Jolly Rancher beer, you kind of expect it. If I told you Jolly Rancher watermelon beer versus a watermelon beer, you expect something different from the two of those.
Wow.
And it can be okay. It just depends. You gotta, some experimentation's needed, and the key is really having a judicious use of your fruit source.
I'm gonna go do that. Go buy a pound of strawberry Jolly Ranchers, throw them in there. What do you think?
I think that's interesting idea.
Yeah.
All right.
See ya.
After the break, we'll get back into fruit beers, boiling versus fermenter versus secondary, bottling, kegging, whatever. And we'll also be taking your questions, 1-888-401-BEER, or hit the chat now button on the website.
This is The Jameel Show.
Welcome back to The Jameel Show. We are talking about fruit beers.
Yes, we are. With our friend the fruit fly.
My friend the fruit fly, who has joined us in the studio. It was hard getting the headphones on, but it worked. And I think he's happy.
He's happy. It's not going nowhere.
All right. So when you're making a fruit beer, you have some choices to make. It's like, when do I add my fruit? You can add it to the boil. Some people I know have added it to the mash when they do something like a pumpkin beer. You can add it to the fermenter. You could add it to the fermenter after it's finished fermenting. You could add it to the bottling or kegging time. If you're using whole fruit, the advantage to tossing it in the boil is that it's going to sanitize the fruit. Fruit is covered in yeast and bacteria. All over the fields, it's just covered in it.
Yeah.
And, you can wash it, but that's not going to take all of it off of there.
Right.
It's very difficult to sanitize. So you need heat to sanitize real fruit. One of the problems with adding fruit to the boil is it sets the pectins, and you end up with a cloudy, hazy beer.
Okay.
So dark beers work better if you can add to the boil.
You can add pectic enzyme though later, can't you?
You can, to break down those pectins, right?
Okay.
The problem with the boil is it's going to drive off the aroma of the fruit, all the volatile things, the very subtle aromatics of the fruit. It's going to drive those off.
Even with the lid on?
Well, and you don't really want to boil with the lid on because you're going to build up DMS.
Well, at flame out, I'm saying. Will you still build
yeah.
up?
Oh. You're going to lose some of it. And the other thing about the boil is you're going to, it's going to lend a little bit of a cooked character to the fruit.
Right.
So, which is not necessarily bad. Certain fruits, it may go well. But, think, for example, a fresh cherry versus a cooked one. Yeah, totally different flavors.
For sure.
For the reasons that, a lot of the molecular structures have changed and things have happened, and a little bit of caramelization. So there's differences there.
Mm-hmm.
So just be aware that that's going to make that change. If you do add it to the boil, I would not add it any earlier than, I'd only the last 15 minutes of the boil, maybe even the last five. Since most of the yeast and all that is on the exterior of the fruit, when you toss it in, that tends to pretty much zap it in a few minutes. It doesn't take too long. So I'd wait towards the end. If you're going to add it to the fermenter, adding it to the primary ferment when you first add your yeast and all that is probably the worst of all the choices. Because what's going to happen is the CO2 is going to drive off the aroma. The vigorous fermentation is going to blow off all your aromatics. And, same thing, if you've added it to the boil. And you're getting no sanitization there. Right, so if you're adding whole fruit to your fermenter, that's
wild yeast, right?
Yeah, you're just screwing up your beer. It's not. You should add it to the boil instead. Mm. If you're doing extract, you could add it to the fermenter, but really, there's no reason to wait until later when the beer's finished and you can get a sense of the beer character and how much extract it's going to take to balance out. Mm. And there's nothing wrong with extract. It depends on the fruit flavor and the type of beer. You can make a really nice fruit beer with extract. One thing we were talking about was, how much to add. And Mike McDowell, who we both know really well, he was asking me a couple years ago about, fruit beers and how you do fruit beers. And he had a really nice Kolsch, really good base beer to start with. And he wanted to add peach flavoring to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I said, well, get yourself a glass and, pour out a measured amount of beer so you know how much you're dosing.
12 ounces.
And then add, you can do smaller amounts.
Okay.
And you just need to know how much it is so you can multiply to do the entire batch.
Right.
Right. So if you do an extract and you're doing it kegging time or bottling time, that's the ideal time to add extract base.
Okay.
Fruit extract base. Though, take a dropper, start adding it to the beer. And when you can just smell the fruit, that is probably the ideal time. Give it a taste, because in fruit beer you have to be able to smell the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully the taste isn't too overboard. It just depends on the type of fruit and all that. And Mike has won gold in the final round of the Nationals with that. And he has never tasted the beer.
No.
He's only smelled it. And he knows it's 9 drops per bottle or whatever with this Kolsch.
You know what's great about that story, though? The first round was a Blonde Ale with 9 drops,
right.
And the second round was a Kolsch.
Oh, there
12.
You go. Right. And now he's gone over the Kolsch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kolsch right. Yeah. In the first round, it got like a third place, and in the second round, it got gold. But if you're doing this method and you want to dose an entire keg, start with a couple of ounces. And adjust, and if you mess up, you can just pour yourself another fresh couple of ounces and try it again. And once you do that, you can say, okay, for 2 ounces, it takes X number of drops. For a full keg, it's going to take, you know, a cup based on, you know, multiplying drops or whatever.
Right.
And what you do is don't pour that entire thing in. Hmm. Once you figure out your measure, go to the keg, add, you know, 3/4 or 7/8 of that amount to the keg.
Okay. Okay. And then try it.
Let it mix, let it melt, give it a taste. You can always add more, but you can't remove any. So you always, just in case, go with a little less, hold back a little bit, and try that and see. And often it's really very close to what you measured out, but you know, there can be a difference across the keg and the number of drops exactly, and you know, the glass and all that. So
right.
You really want to hold a little back when you're making that. That's an excellent tip for that.
You don't have to sterilize extract. It's already
extract done. Is clean. So okay. Make sure your dropper is clean, okay. And you know, whatever you're putting is touching the extract is clean.
Okay.
Otherwise, there's no sanitization, which is one of the benefits of extract. So extract's best added at kegging or bottling.
Okay.
If you're going whole fruit or puree, I think the ideal time, especially for the Oregon purees, which I really think is a good product and I use, is after primary fermentation is complete. This is one of the only times I would do something close to a secondary. Hmm. Is that's complete, you get another clean, sanitized fermenter,
mm-hmm.
Add your fruit puree to that or your whole fruit, and then rack the beer directly onto that.
Hmm.
And when you do that, try and pick up a little bit of the yeast off the bottom of the fermenter if it's all dropped down, and that yeast is going to multiply and eat up the fruit sugars.
Right.
It's not a full pitch of yeast, but you really don't want all the fruit to just totally get, you know, blown out and dry. Some of that sweetness helps and all that.
I did have a question come through about, you know, if, and if so, how much fermentable sugar is added by fruit?
There is a chart out there that tells you how much sugar per pound of various fruits. And for the extract, there's like zero. Or very, very little. For the other fruits, it just depends on what fruit they are. They're all different. And I've seen charts for that and articles in the magazines about how much sugar you get from each.
And I think the puree also gives a rough brix or a gravity for 3 gallons on the back, so you can just do the math that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an excellent point.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the I think the best thing is in the secondary like that. And if you're using whole fruit and you worry about sanitizing, well, one of the advantages to going into the secondary is all the fermentation is complete. The alcohol level in the beer has gone up, and that is going to help with any issues of wild yeast, things like that.
Nice.
Now, you can take your whole fruit. You can boil some water on the stove, blanch it, just drop your fruit in, pull it back out, and that would stun most of the stuff, and
use like a grain bag or something.
Yeah, you could do something along the lines of that.
Okay,
just a couple of minutes and some boiling water, and that'll do that. But you know, once the alcohol's there, that tends to protect the beer fairly well. So that's one of the reasons why you don't do it at the beginning of fermentation. You wait till fermentation's done,
mm-hmm.
Put your fruit in a second container, then rack your beer on top of that, and you know, the alcohol will help protect it.
So you're waiting for your primary, what, like 7 to 14 days roughly in there?
Yeah, for your average ale,
okay.
Sure. And then, most of the yeast will have dropped out. You can either pitch fresh yeast or just pick up some yeast off the bottom of the fermenter when you're racking it, and that will help ferment the fruit out, the sugars in the fruit.
You're going to get probably color from the fruit you add too, aren't you?
Right. And, again, that's one of the things. Extract won't add a lot of color.
Right.
Real fruit will. The puree will add more color than real fruit most of the time. They've got a really nice color in that puree. Mm-hmm. They think they do a high quality job with that. And, I suppose you could add some dye or something, you know, food dye if you wanted to adjust the colors, but,
it's another variable. I mean,
yeah, if you're doing a dark beer, you know, don't worry about the color. If you're doing a lighter colored beer, like a blonde or a wheat beer or something like that, and you want to see color in there, you could boil some fruit.
Mm-hmm.
You could, add some to the secondary as well. And, that might, help, bring out more color getting in the boil.
What if, I have a question, as far as wanting to clone like a lambic, like the Kriek or something, you know, those are very hard to do. But they're so fruity and so flavorful, they're almost like a wine. Do you have any recommendations as far as doing a lambic? Like from raspberries or?
Well, it's very tricky, and it takes a lot more fruit than you would think, especially if you're doing the cherries or the raspberries don't take quite as much as the cherries, but with cherries, you need a ton of cherries. And you tend to wait. Again, it's also, you let your initial lambic process occur over the course of a year or so, and then you can add your fruit once that's done and balanced out, and you can add the amount of fruit you need to balance with the other character of the beer, and that's going to take, you know, another year, 6 months, as you want that fruit to really break down in the lambic.
Right.
Well, the bugs a lot of flavor in there.
Keep eating it over
exactly.
And over.
They're gonna keep eating those sugars, and they'll keep going until, you know, there's nothing left, and that's why, you know, they tend to be fairly dry unless you pasteurize it and then add something. And some of the lambic producers are doing that. You know, they will kill everything off and then blend to get different. Because if you don't kill everything off, it's gonna keep going. You can add up with bottle bombs. It's
right.
Okay in a keg.
Right.
Because you can, if it starts getting too gassy, you can just bleed off some gas, and it's not a big deal, and those kegs will hold a fair amount of pressure. But bottles can be extremely dangerous.
Okay.
So if you're messing with fruit beers and you're doing bottles, you want to make sure that it's really finished doing what it's going to do. You know, take your time. Don't bottle a bunch of sugar in there from the fruit. Or if you do, you know, you need to adjust your priming sugar down,
right?
Because you're gonna end up with way too big a carbonation on there.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna ask about. It's gonna affect your priming sugar. You still have to add priming sugar?
Yeah, most of the time, and it depends. If you if you're dealing with extract, you know, the flavoring extracts, and you're adding that, a bottling or kegging, you don't really have to worry about adjusting your priming sugar because it doesn't really add a whole lot of fermentables to it. You know, you're adding a very small amount to start with, and you know, it's not got a lot of sugar to it, so it's gonna really not be an issue. If you're adding whole fruit to the secondary, you gotta wait for that to ferment out. And if your yeast, if it's been like a barley wine or something like that, it's been a really big beer and it's been a long time, and the yeast are getting tired, you might want to pitch some fresh yeast to help consume some of those sugars in the fruit. And if your yeast is still seems okay, you know, pull some off the bottom of the fermenter when you rack, and that will dissolve the sugars in the fruit or eat up the sugars. And you just need to give it enough time. So if you see activity, you really want to wait until it's finished before you bottle it. Or, you know, if you're gonna take a chance with that, or you're gonna put a whole cherry in each bottle or whatever, take into account how much sugar is in there. Get yourself a ballpark from one of those charts on the internet or one of the magazine articles, and use that to adjust your priming sugar. Because otherwise, you know, those bottles, when they get pressured, they will explode when you pick them up, and serious injuries from those.
Wow.
So you got to be very careful about that.
You had mentioned earlier someone adding pumpkins to a mash.
Right, right.
Why would you?
You know, people, you know, getting pumpkin flavor is very tricky. Pumpkin is an odd vegetable, right? And so it really falls into spice herb vegetable beers,
right.
I guess. But the trick is bake them in an hour for 350 degrees for an hour on a cookie sheet. Split them up and bake them, and then add those to the mash. You can add them to the boil. I guess the idea behind adding them to the mash is just, you know, allowing the wort to have more contact with the pumpkin for a longer period of time. Some of the enzymes in the mash will break down some of the starches in the pumpkin. The pumpkin has a lot of starch, and the breakdown of that starch will turn into sugars, and just like it does with grain, and that'll also add to the beer and the character, and you'll get a little gravity boost from that as well.
Wow. I had a customer steep bananas in all his beers because he believed that bananas added a malt profile, like a cream flavor to it. So all his beers were steeped with like 2 to 3 bananas And it was, I mean, his beer was good. And I had another guy, another customer.
Did they taste like bananas then?
No, not at all. It was just kind of thick, you know, just, it was really bizarre. And I had another guy who actually bottle conditioned his beer with raisins. He would throw in a couple raisins, and it would actually balloon.
Was the guy like 80 years old and spent a lot of time in prison, or
something like that? But
the old style.
He's out of the boonies up too.
One of the old style brewers. Yeah,
you should have seen this guy. Oh my God, his teeth. But anyways, he brought me a bottle of beer, and I was like, "What's floating in here? These things look like marbles," and there were just a couple raisins just. For conditioning and carbonation. I'm like,
don't worry about them, son. They're just the raisins I use for conditioning.
And he would go off and like, it's best to finish off the beer and eat those raisins. I was like, dude.
Eat the raisins. And here's the old sock I got the yeast out of right here.
A prize in each bottle.
Wow.
I had one guy, actually, this is another good story. He had missing fingers. He owned pigs and stuff, and you know, three daughters, you know, out in the boonies.
Pigs and three
he
daughters.
He's like, I want to ferment some watermelons, get my pig drunk, because I don't want to take him to the vet, because I don't want to clip his toenails. So he was trying to get his pig drunk, so we could just get him inebriated to, you know, saw off his toenails. So he fermented a trash can full of these watermelons, you know, champagnes, and got his pig drunk with watermelon.
Listen here, City Slicker, don't question me. Just give me what I need.
I wonder if he was really going to clip the toenails or he was intending something else with his pig. Did he also buy, like, a tutu for the pig while he was there?
The thing is he had tried to do it without alcohol before that with an axe, but he accidentally hit the pig's foot. So he didn't realize in order to calm the pig down, he had to get him drunk.
I found that the kick lasts if you get him drunk first.
Bizarre. I mean,
it's a good job you have, John.
Thanks, buddy. Straight out of the moons, you know.
The chat room wants to know if it was Dr. Scott.
Yeah. No.
That's how he met Dr. Scott.
That was it, yeah. It's a goat story. I'm waiting for that one.
No. Dr. Scott and his drunken goats.
Yeah.
So, fruit beer. And if you've got any questions for us on fruit beers, you know, join the chat room or give us a call, 1-888-401-BEER. We'll be back after this break and take your questions. Sinking like stones, all that we fall for. Homes, places we've grown, all of us are done for.
Now, back to the Jameel Show.
All right, we're back. We're talking about fruit beer.
Yes. Now, a lot of ladies like fruit beers.
Right.
So, if you're a single guy out there, master the fruit beer recipe, you know.
Right, and make it a high alcohol one. Yeah, maybe spike it with some vodka.
Exactly. Panty dropper.
Great alcohol. You know. So you can take advantage of some poor... You know, I got daughters. What's the matter with you? What kind of advice is this you're giving out on the radio?
I'm sure you've taken advantage of some ladies in your time, Jameel.
No, never. I take advantage of...
I would never do such a thing. You loved them.
Exactly.
Okay. Right. My bad.
I did have a couple questions come through earlier if you want those.
Sure.
Do you want to wrap up first? Or?
Well, so for fruit beers... Very important, you know, you must have a great base beer before you can make a great fruit beer. If you don't have a great base beer, adding fruit to a beer just ends up with crap. Look to the food world for your types of pairings, right? And depending on what kind of fruit flavor you're looking for, sometimes you want real fruit or the Oregon puree, or sometimes the extract is really the way to go, or maybe a blend of both. You're going to need to vary the amount of extract based on the style you're doing. So if it's a drier, crisper beer, you're going to need less. If it's a darker, roastier, sweeter beer, you're going to need more. Mm-hmm. So you're going to need to vary your amount of fruit. If you're doing extract, the thing to do is just dose it in the keg or whatever and adjust carefully until you just get the aroma and then and see how that works out for you. And sanitizing whole fruit, you can kind of parboil it and then add it to your secondary fermenter, and that's probably the best of all the situations. I would stick with the Oregon puree if you have that available. It's cheaper than buying fresh fruit, and it tastes better, and it's sanitary, and it just works out wonderful, so I would do that. And I think that's about most of the tips I have.
Nice. Great.
All right, so one comment that came through early on, I don't know if it was a joke or what, because the guy was talking about his fruit beers after the fact, but he said that, in his opinion, most fruit beers are made to cover defects.
That's probably a lot of times I would say that might be true.
I've done
which
that.
Which is
have
contrary to
up beers.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's contrary to what you're saying about making a good fruit beer, because right. You said the main thing is to have a good base beer.
Right.
So then in that case you're not covering up defects. But maybe some breweries are like, well, this one didn't come out so well, let's throw some peach in there.
Yeah.
Could be. Yeah, and that's why, you know, John says he's never had a good fruit beer. You know, I have. In a lot of competitions, and a lot of brewers have had me, you know, sample some really good fruit beers, and it's because they've made a good base beer and they've perfected that, and then they adjust. I do a lot of specialty and fruit beers based on robust porter, because I make a really good robust porter, and I've mastered that, so now I can take it to other places. Mm. I can try different things with it because I have that down.
Mm.
If you don't, then you know why. You know, why bother? You're just gonna, you're spending money on the fruit or the extract or whatever you're adding to it, and you're wasting it. It's a bad beer. Don't, you know, adding fruit isn't gonna hide anything.
And that, I think that's a great point. Someone in the chat room mentioned it too. I think it was Gary Foster's with us today, and said he has a great, I think he said it was a brown beer that he brews all the time. He knows the beer. A good way now for him to maybe play with it would be to do things like adding fruit to it. So just like you said, you know you can make this robust porter great every time.
Right.
So a way for you to tweak it now is to, you know, do some fruit things with it.
What would you add to a brown?
Depends. You know, if it's not hoppy.
Like an English brown or something.
Depends if it's a northern or a southern. You know, one's more roasty than the other. But you know, cherries are always a nice option. Or,
sounds pretty good.
You know, fruits like peach and strawberry and those are tend to be for the lighter, crisper beers generally. Mm-hmm. And the other fruits that have a more intense flavor tend to be better balanced with the darker, roastier beers, like the cherries and raspberries tend to go with the stouts and porters and mm-hmm. Maybe browns. Brown's kind of a tweener. Mm-hmm. Depends on how roasty that brown is. If it's roasty, I would go with the more intense fruits. If it's less roasty, I would maybe go with some of the other fruits. But there's a lot of options there. Mm-hmm. I think you can really have an opportunity to experiment. And if you're brewing one of your favorite beers, what you might try doing is brew instead of 5 gallons, brew 10 gallons. And then 5 gallons you go ahead and keg up like normal. Mm-hmm. And then the other five you might take split it in half, and one of them put peaches or whatever, watermelon. The other half you can put cherries or strawberries or whatever, and get a couple of different ones, sample, or you could spread that out into gallons. If you get some gallon jugs, the used wine jugs, put your fruit in there and try 5 different kinds of fruit and see which one works out best. Sometimes a blend of fruits will work well. But that tends to be a little more difficult, because then you got to balance the two. And sometimes that works out nice. Sometimes it just kind of confuses things. In competition, I'll see a lot of tropical beers where people have added, apricot and mango and coconut and, Elk Grove Brewing has a tropical beer. And it is it's very, very fruity.
Is that where you got your pineapple from?
No, I don't know why I did a pineapple IPA, but let my experience be the guide for you.
Okay.
Learn from my mistakes.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll get tortured now for pineapple IPA. I don't think anybody knew that story until now. I never really admitted to that one.
Whoops.
Now you will feel my pain, Jamil.
Mind you.
Your pineapple story will hopefully ride along next to my Star Sand beer.
For some reason, I just don't think that.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I'll get tortured as much.
Of course, they want to know, should we use our heroin rig to divvy up the fruit?
The heroin rig is probably not the right one to use because, again, your heroin rig, you're going to use that for, you know, injecting small amounts into your body and also for measuring, you know, smaller doses. I guess if you were dosing a beer with extract, you know, you've got 2 ounces, you know, those fine syringes that you use for your heroin injection are perfect for that.
Okay. For the whole fermenter.
The whole fermenter, you're going to need to go with something bigger, you know, something, you
An
know.
IV unit or what?
IV unit or if, you know.
It's good, John.
You know, something you use into, you know, if you went, go into the meth lab.
Okay.
And get, you know, the big scoop you use for the Sudafed pellets and, you know, use something like that. Nice. Or the same scale you're using when you're cooking up a big batch of meth.
Okay.
Perfect.
That'll help.
All right, what's next week? You guys know?
Next week is Robust Porters.
All right, speaking of
One of my favorite styles, and John, I know you like that style too, right?
Can you bring one in?
I don't think I have any.
I'll bring one of mine, and I have
one. I might
one.
Be able to brew one.
By then?
Yeah. We got 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah. 2 weeks from now, and you got one, right?
Mine's over a year and a half old.
Yeah.
It's aged out well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And what's your recipe?
It was your recipe.
My recipe, of course. Yeah. Oh, you started from a good base there.
The only thing I changed was the yeast and the baseball, and that's it.
Yeah. And I started my base recipe, Chris and Regan at More Beer.
Right.
Helped me with that, and then I've adjusted it over time since then, and that's also kind of the base for the chocolate hazelnut porter that More Beer sells.
Right.
And that's a nice base beer. And if you're doing fruit beers and you want to do something like that, then another good show to listen to.
Nice.
All right. Coming up after this is a repeat of the Sunday show. Listen in. It'll be great. Lots of good information and a lot of entertainment as well. Tomorrow, 10 o'clock, listen to Graham Sanders and the Craft Brewer Show. It's really excellent. One of my favorites. And we'll see you in 2 weeks with Robust Porter.
The Jameel Show has been a production of the Brewing Network. Please send questions for Jameel to jameel@thebrewingnetwork.com. The Jameel Show airs live every other Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Brewing Network.